Sometimes life changes so dramatically that it is not sufficient to call it a new chapter, but instead a new book. Today, we're in that moment for the people of Israel. The Bible is composed of 66 smaller books, Genesis at the beginning and Revelation at the end. All of the iconic Bible stories that you know are from the book of Genesis. The Garden of Eden, Noah and the flood, God's promise to Abraham, and also Joseph and his coat of many colors. These iconic Bible stories and lots of other crazy stuff, that all happens in the first book of the Bible. Genesis follows the storyline of a man named Abraham, his children, his grandchildren, and his great-grandchildren. This family goes by many different names throughout the Bible. The Hebrews, the Jews, and the Israelites, these are all the same people. So in Genesis, we're following this family as they grow and follow God. But then something changes. To really understand where the people are in this story, we have to back up just a little. That guy that was mentioned, Joseph, he is the great grandchild of Abraham. He had 11 brothers, and because he was the favorite, his father gave him a beautiful, multicolored coat. His brothers, understandably, were very jealous of this special treatment. But in an extreme act, they took Joseph and they sold him as a slave to some merchants that were on their way to Egypt. In a shocking turn of events, Joseph, with a set of very special skills, he used those to impress the leaders, and he became second in command of all of Egypt. Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt, knew that he could trust Joseph, so he set him in charge of the grain collection and distribution. It was a time of famine and national crisis. God gave Joseph wisdom to save the lives of the entire region, and this included his estranged family. When Joseph died at the age of 110, he and his family had permanently settled in the suburb of Egypt. He was buried like a head of state, and the entire nation grieved. He was a somebody. He had influence, a meaningful job, and he was surrounded by a family who cared for him. When he died, his family, they were set. They had land, property, they were highly honored in the Egyptian community because of Joseph. The end. Close the book. End of Genesis. Then everything changes. Exodus 1. There is a new Pharaoh in Egypt who does not remember Joseph. The family who is highly favored is now a stranger. Not only did this Pharaoh lack understanding of these people, but he also became afraid of them. He didn't understand them, and he saw them as a threat. For fear that the Israelites would soon outnumber the armies of Pharaoh, he imposed harsh rules, taxes, made them into slaves to work the land where they had arrived as privileged and honored guests. We've gone through a lot of changes, us, over the past several months, and even more in just the past several weeks. Many of us have had our worlds turned upside down. Who we are, our health, our families, what society looks like, what we contribute to the economy, all of that may have changed. It's time for a new book. We are writing a new book now, not just a new chapter. To mark these transitions, as Carrie said, we are starting a new sermon series called Heroes for Hard Times. And these are hard times for lots of reasons. So when we think about heroes, is anyone a fan of Marvel Comics? Yeah? That's so good. I'm really glad. I'm not really, not because I don't like them, but I'm just not a huge movie comic book person, so please correct me later. But here's what I know about the Marvel franchise, right? They love to create a hero, and then create another hero, and then create another hero, and another hero, and another hero, and another hero. And you know what? Just for fun, let's put them all in one movie. Right? You know what I wouldn't give for 5 to 8 altruistic, self-sacrificing heroes right now? Just anyone, right, to swoop in and stop this train mid-crash. But that's not what we're seeing. When we read or watch the news, it doesn't feel like we're surrounded by a bunch of heroes. What it feels like is a bunch of villains just competing for airtime. The headlines are bad, and they don't seem to be improving. We need a hero. The Israelites, the people in Exodus 1, they feel the same way. Had there been a newspaper circulating at that time, it would have said something like, "Joseph, dead. Everyone enslaved." And then the next edition would be something like, "Pharaoh mandates massacre. Joseph still dead." Right? It's the same stuff. It's all bad. This story that Macklin just read is about the midwives. But it's not a headline. It may be an op-ed or a weekend morning special. To find the heroes in hard times, you have to zoom way in. Bad balanced by good doesn't sell out newsstands. It's not a headline. It's not even a main event. It's two brave women in a room faithfully bringing new life into the world. There have always been hard times. Admittedly, this feels like a different kind of hard time, right? This is uncharted territory in many ways. And in different hard times, how do we know what is good and what is right in our world? It's unclear. Everyone has different opinions about what is good and what is bad. Our peers, those in power, they're all pointing at different things, saying, "This is good, no, this is bad. This is good, no, this is bad. This is good, no, this is bad. If you think this is good, you're bad." Who do you trust? The midwives of this story are heroes for hard times because they didn't depend on what was being said around them. They look to God and how God values people, not how their society did at the time. Pharaoh commanded, "Kill all the Hebrew baby boys. Just toss them in the river. But let the daughters live." What a wicked, selfish, terrible law. We are able to see that this is evil and cruel. But at the time, a case could be made that it served the purpose of the nation. We know that throughout history, we can look back and say, how could anyone have thought that that was a good idea? How could anyone in the room have let that happen? For a silly example, there's one streaming platform that has some older cartoons. And in front of showing these older cartoons, they flash a warning. Not about anything graphic or anything obscene, but they say, may contain outdated cultural references. Which is to say, we're sorry that this is so offensive, but times have changed and we worked really hard on this. Another example that I think we all use is, how do I know when it will be socially acceptable to ... Or, when can I do such and such without other people judging me? Right? It's very clear from these statements that we're looking to each other and to the news and to the scientists, which is a good idea, to tell us what is right. Science is for scientists, but what is good, right, and true is for God. During normal times, we don't have to think about this stuff as much. We have ingrained patterns of behavior by which we're able to judge very quickly what's good, rightly or wrongly. But when everything changes and it's all up in the air, we are primed for reevaluating everything. Our faith, unfortunately, is not a formula. We can't plug in variables that spit out an answer. A preacher in Texas named Bishop T.D. Jakes last week said something I loved. He said, faith is an art. Faith is an art. It's an art. If faith is an art, then it's something we each practice. And as we do, all of our results will look a little bit different. We're sitting at a crossroads of several different crises at the same time. And it's going to take some practice and some artistic imagination. Like, you know, the Hebrew wives, they're just better at this. It's going to take some imagination to get to the other side. In so many ways, the coronavirus pandemic has actually prepared us to take the action that has been taken in the days after George Floyd's death. We know from the coronavirus that we are capable of more change than we ever thought possible. We are capable of imagining new, better, safer, and more just ways to structure society. This pandemic allowed us, who are typically stuck in our own grooves and our own paths, to be pushed off our tracks a little bit. We are being forced to determine for ourselves what is right and which way we will walk. I don't want to waste this opportunity. So peers and power, they do not make good judges of morality. We have to do that work ourselves. But I want to say one more thing about power. Power is always afraid to lose power. Nathan wrote a really great article this week about power addictions. So I think everyone should read it. But this is rampant, and it's not just one or two people. In Exodus, everything Pharaoh does in this chapter is motivated by a fear to not lose power. His power is fragile, and he knows it. One surefire way that power has found to remain in power is to make the people afraid as well. They leverage that fear, and they create ways of having the people fight their battles. Pharaoh thinks, "I can't trust these strangers," but what he says is, "We can't trust these strangers. They're unknown to him." So what he says is, "These people are a threat to you. These Hebrews, they may look like they're living peacefully, marrying, having lots of babies, but really, they're raising an army. There will be an economic downturn. We'll lose our country if this group of people is not kept under control." And if that sounds a little on the nose, I'm sorry, but it's almost a direct quote. So what does this mean for us who want to be heroes of hard times? It means that first, we refuse to adopt those fears of the powerful. And as the midwives did, we fear God, not people. As we've seen, the society values us and our neighbors. It's fickle. We're hot stuff one day, and we're disposable the next. We cannot value ourselves and each other according to what society, our jobs, or our leadership says about us. These standards are moving targets with selfish agendas. We fear God. We use the art of faith to act as best that we can. And lastly, what was the result? What was the result of the midwives' brave action? Well, when Pharaoh heard what they were doing, he was upset, which is a dangerous thing. He could no longer trust them to be part of his team. He dismissed them, and they lost their privileges and access to his court. They feared God. They did what they could to upset evil plans. But in the end, Pharaoh just told another bunch of people to carry out the same plan. Evil will always find another way. Whatever your job is, whoever you are, sometimes the best thing you can do is just frustrate evil. We cannot tear down and destroy evil by ourselves. What we can do is fear God and just frustrate evil a little bit. Godly people will have to repeatedly choose not to play along. Don't let the reality of what you can't do stop you from doing what you can do. These midwives simply did their job as they had been trained, loving these women and these babies and their God. And that simple act of choosing to do the good that they know they could do, it was recognized by God. God blessed their efforts and their names, Shipra and Pua. They're remembered to this day. Heroes come in all shapes, and we're going to talk about that throughout the next several weeks. These heroes are from the oppressed group, and they had a tiny bit of power to frustrate evil. This is an underdog kind of hero story. The decree said, "Kill every Hebrew baby boy, but let the daughters live." Next week, I get the privilege to talk to you again because I want to talk to you about Exodus chapter 2. In Exodus chapter 2, we're going to look at two daughters, and what it means to be a hero when your life is not at risk. When you, just by luck, are being spared by evil. But for today, remember that whatever has changed in the past months, your value, your worth, the amount that God loves you, has not changed. It is not dependent on your job, your bank account, your neighborhood, your family, your country of origin, or anything else that we like to use to determine people's value. And while everything has changed, and we are starting a new book together, God has not changed. We are the same before God, and we do not need to adopt the fears of those around us. We can do what we can do to frustrate evil just a little bit. Let's pray.